Hey guys, today's podcast is brought to you by the Lousy Weather Media Basement Comedy Show 4. That's what I do, Bill Squire. I smash my microphone into the floor.
It adds emphasis.
Yeah, we just did this show on Saturday. It's now on iTunes and Stitcher. We had Chris Clem, AJ Giorgi, and Sean Sullivan all live in our basement. You can now listen to it anytime, on demand, on iTunes, all that stuff. Now, enjoy the show. Week, Bill Squire. Bill Squire is here.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Let's not talk about that, though.
It's episode 89.
Can we not talk about why it's a rough week?
It's been a rough week.
Hard times.
It's been, yeah, hard times, Daddy. Fucking Dusty Rhodes passed away.
Mm-hmm. All right, I can talk about that.
The All Cavaliers right.
the thing,
just
That's
lost.
What I don't want to talk about.
I just had an OVI this week.
That's, I think, the roughest part.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Or wait, what was the loss? Yeah. What hit you harder more?
What?
The loss or the
Dusty
OVI?
Dusty Rhodes.
Oh,
I think
wow.
Was well, the
I was
worst.
Fucking way off.
So I got the OVI.
Oh, my God. That's my favorite answer.
I got the OVI Wednesday night, and then Dusty Rhodes died Thursday, and it was just like piling on top of devastation for me. I didn't
know. But the
know
Dusty Rhodes hurt worse.
Yeah.
But you realize, like, he was basically dead for like 5 years. Like, when's the last time Dusty Rhodes made a difference in your life?
Oh, every day, man. Just experiencing the Dusty. Just the Dusty, man.
What's your best Dusty memory, though?
Oh, the Dusty Rhodes and the polka dots dancing with Sapphire, the Common Woman, when I was a very young child.
I don't know much about Dusty Rhodes, but that sounds amazing. Sounds like he's about to inspire my life.
He was the American Dream, man, the son of a plumber.
Yes, for the card, and he gave it to you. He's like, here you go, legitimate Dusty Rhodes fan.
But this morning I had court for my OVI, right? Yeah. And right on my ticket it said 9 a.m. you show up to Barberton. And I'm guilty as can be. I was.
That sounds more like the sentence.
I was drunk.
Having to be in Barberton.
Yeah, that was the worst part, man. So I got pulled over, like basically in Akron, heading up 77 North. When they pull me out of my car, they take me to Springfield Police Department to breathalyze me and stuff. And then my court's in fucking Barberton. I mean, it was just the way all this jurisdiction shit went. So anyway, I go to Barberton today at 9 a.m., like my ticket says, and I walk in there and I say, hi, I'm here for court. And they say, we don't have your name here.
I'm free.
And that was almost my reaction. They were like, no, Ohio State Highway Patrol didn't send your information over. And they were like, we're going to have to postpone your court date. And I was like, you mean I'm free to go? I'm done. I'm not being tried. And they're like, no, you got to come back today at 1.
You're still fucked.
So, yeah, I had to go back and experience it at 1 o'clock. And when I showed up, it was funny. I sign in on the paper, and then like a couple minutes later, I go back over, and my name's crossed out. And I was like, "What? Why is my name crossed out?" And the bailiff was like, "Oh, that guy was here this morning." And I was like, "It's me."
I would have been like, "He was here this morning. Good day, sir."
Yeah, no.
And just went on your merry way.
And he learned a valuable lesson.
I'm sure he had to pay a lot of money. Well, keep doing your job, fellas.
He should have paid it for it and crossed some other dude's name off the list.
So I made a mistake.
Yeah.
And now I'm paying for it through the. Money.
Yes, that would be paying for it, correct? Yeah.
Jesus. So Bill Squire's here, and you're on the Alan Cox show.
True.
That's every day. So you have to, Monday through Friday.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to do real radio from Monday through Friday, and then on Tuesday night...
Nope, because I'm on the Alan Cox show.
Oh, nice.
So, and then on Tuesday night, you decided to come play...
I feel
play,
so at home with that.
You decided to come play pretend radio here with us in our dining
radio.
Room. This is It's nice. It feels good.
You get to say the fuck word. That must be
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, that is a fucking...
You
nice thing. I just realized
time.
It right now when you said it. I'm like, oh my God, I can't just swear.
You can say the fuck.
I won't stutter because I can actually just say fucking cunt.
You can say whatever you want. You can, but you also, you're hosting shows up in Cleveland.
Yeah, I do some comedy shows, and yeah.
And that was something, I listened to you on Matt Brady and Devin's podcast, the Funny Stop podcast, and one thing you really emphasized was how much you want to put into bringing up the local talent. kind of, I always call it the bootstraps theory. Like, you've got your name out there, so you're constantly going to put other people on shows to put their names out there.
Yeah, it doesn't do our scene any good to have one guy get mildly successful. Like, there's a lot of really funny people around here. You guys are doing something that I appreciate. Like, seeing you here, you know, you got a nice setup. You got good microphones.
Yeah.
I like this. I like seeing people try shit. So when I see comics out there that are funny, that are putting themselves out there, that are trying to make a living being funny, I'm like, yeah, that's what I like to do. Let's try and do it together. So if I have to help them, then maybe someday they'll help me or whatever. But even if they don't help me, I don't give a fuck. I just want them to be able to go out and make people laugh and have a place to do it.
I mean, there's always, that's one thing that's kind of booming right now, is there's kind of, it's starting to be a lot of spots for people to go.
Yeah.
It seems like, you know, especially in Kent, they got their Sunday night, the Monday night Stone Tavern, the Tuesday night at Michelle's, AJ's doing, like, there's different rooms.
Yeah,
everywhere.
Kent's got its own scene. Akron's got its own scene. Cleveland's got its own scene. And then guys can jump to different places. So you can perform in front of different audiences with different reactions. Like, you're going to get a different kind of crowd in Kent than you are at the Funny Stop, than you are at Hilarities. That's good to have that kind of diversity, because it makes you a better comic.
We always say that rape goes well in Kent, like rape jokes, things like that.
Oh, Kent jokes. I have thought of that. I'm like, oh, I don't think it always goes well, but so the jokes, they seem to do.
And then that's one of the things.
That's like open mic kind of thing, like where you're just being a little shocking and edgy and whatnot. And there's a lot of that in Cleveland, too. I mean, if you go to any... That's any scene. That's one of those things where you go to an open mic somewhere, and people are just throwing ideas out there, and they, you know, they're newer, and they're like, oh, I got this joke, and it's going to be like... Then you go to two open mics, like, oh, all right, there's a lot of rape jokes. Maybe I should try and write some jokes that have a little more substance to it. Not that I'm against it. A joke's funny when it's funny, but a rape joke isn't going to build your career... all the time.
No.
Not saying it never happens, but most of the time it does.
It's just
it's not the cornerstone.
It's the rapey scene out there. It's like like at the beginning of the show, I was saying we did the Basement Comedy Show 4 this past Saturday, and that's basically us doing a house show here.
Yeah.
We have people on the show constantly, and then we kind of put them in front of like 30 to 40 of our friends in our basement. And fucking, they just tell jokes. Chris Clem was here, and he basically did 20 minutes about the water damage all over our basement.
Fucking funny.
And it was hilarious. And then, that's kind of the idea, is like the people we know are kind of, they might just be like stoners or married or in college or doing their thing. They're not out at the show, so we're bringing something to them by experiencing them to comedians here, and they're getting to see a different room by coming in here
and having a unique place to perform, and then people that want to be at the show. That's always the biggest thing, is if you have people that actually want to hear comedy as opposed to, I mean, that was the biggest difference from when I started comedy. We'd do open mics at bars, like a place called No Excuses, and people didn't want to hear comedy there.
Yeah.
Because it was just a sports bar that had an open mic night.
I was about to say, that happens with the open mic a lot. It's just a guy drinking.
Yeah.
That happens with bands a lot, too. We were in a metal band, and like, we would get on stage, and they're like, why?
Yeah,
like, why the fuck are you doing
this? Why is
this
here tonight?
Yeah, please stop.
Right, because they just want to listen to the jukebox. They just want to hear the same songs that they've heard a million times again and again. But you're like, I'm trying to do something different. Let me do it.
How long have you been doing comedy? Let's go ahead and just dive into it.
11 years.
11 years?
Yeah.
So what were you doing before comedy?
I was a Mormon missionary.
You were a Mormon missionary.
Yeah,
just
Mormon
missionary. Crossing the earth, knocking on doors.
I was in the Philippines doing it there.
Jesus.
I had two older brothers, and they all went on missions, so then I felt like I should do
it. What age were you in the Philippines?
I was 20 when I got there.
Okay, now...
And 22 when I left.
I don't know anything about the Philippines other than, like, a tsunami hitting it 10 years ago, so...
I don't know. A tsunami probably hit there today. No way. but
what's good? Was it just, like, a little fishing village and you come strolling into it, or was it a nice city?
No,
it was
a magic underpants. Why is he here? any underpants are magic to them. No, I was in Manila, Quezon City, exactly, but Manila, which is, like, very city, very, like squatter villages and stuff like that, where it's a lot of little huts and, like, you know, they're made out of, like, we call them fours. My dad's a bricklayer, so they're called 4-inch block. That's what they're like regular cinder blocks, 8 inches or 12 inches. These are made out of 4-inch ones. They're smaller, but they just, you know, build shitty little shanty, and they have one room and a bathroom, and that's it. And like a little area where they do their kitchen.
And like how many people in the house? Like 14. I mean, usually
it's between 6 and like 8, but like there's usually like 2 babies. There's like a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, and then there's the adult kids. That by adult, I mean they're like 17, 18 years old. And then the dads are always like transient. They're either there or they're not. But they don't have jobs. They just come in and out of the lives as they please. And then there's the whatever siblings that the mom had. So it's like the grandma. And then sometimes there's a great grandma, but it's usually that. Like this just lady like had this a baby. And
immediate
then,
family, yeah. And they're stuck. So what were you staying at? Did you have
they
had a
like,
hut?
I mean,
or?
No, they, like I was in an apartment, like a regular apartment that would be, I mean, something you'd see. Like you'd see my apartment and be like, okay, this is all right. I had like toilet, like regular toilet, everything.
So it was like, you did
standard.
You like guys
but then
go
you go
out
into their world.
Did you set up a church or anything and try to
was it was
it
all
like
established like
thing?
The Mormons are fucking ready to go, like they they have churches everywhere, anywhere they can be they are and have been for as long as they've been allowed to be there. They're trying to get into China, like they want to go get some numbers. Like they that is a number driven church where they're trying to they're proselytizing at a very high rate, whereas, you know, Catholics, they're just trying to get people to have more babies. Jews are kind of like, eh, we're good.
Yeah,
like Jews. I like the Jewish approach where they're like, and we'll take care of ourselves. We're not trying to get new members. Yeah. I like because then that makes you kind of like, well, how come I can't be Jewish?
Yeah.
I'll convert. Like that's fine.
Start wanting to conform with them. Dude.
Yeah, because it seems. Harder to obtain.
I was about to say, what is it? What, it's almost like the rebellious thing. Like your mom tells you you can't do something.
Right.
So now you're going to.
It's reverse psychology.
Become Jewish. So, I mean.
And the goal to become Jewish. Oh,
so were your parents like missionaries or they have normal jobs or what happened with that?
My dad's a bricklayer. Like he owns his own business around, you know, here. He's built tons of houses.
Hard-working blue-collar
folk. Yeah, blue-collar guy. Like,
where are you from originally?
I grew up in Medina. I was born in Berea. Mm. So from the Northeast Ohio area.
Yeah, just
Strongsville
general
was for a little
idea.
Bit. I've lived in Cuyahoga Falls. I've lived in Cleveland and Lakewood. Like I've been all over Northeast Ohio.
So what was going on in childhood Bill Squire life?
Just trying to, you know, I was the middle child.
Were you into like music and
music,
shit like
sports,
that?
And funny shit? Like I've always been drawn to things that were funny. So
did you play sports too?
I was very small, so I played them. You know, until you get to the point where you realize, I'm not gonna be able to do this at a high level. Like pretty much eighth grade was when I kind of realized that I wasn't. Gonna be
you weren't the high school football hero.
Well, everybody else hit growth spurts, and I was like behind, and so like I was like I can't fucking do this. Like I won't be able to be that. So then I started like thinking like, well, maybe I'll be a coach, and then I just started getting into music and comedy a little heavier.
So what was the comedy back then? Then
a lot of the Simpsons. Simpsons is probably my biggest influence, just from a humor standpoint. But when I kind of took a turn in trying to find comedy that's a little more substantial, or not even, because I like all comedy. I like slapstick shit. I like, you know, a lot of early Adam Sandler stuff, like his albums. I really, really like, like Steve Martin. Just any funny movie, really, I'd give it a chance. But when I saw Swingers at like I was 14 or 15 years old, and I had never seen a movie that was subtly funny like that, where the jokes are all there, and then you watch it again, and it gets funnier the second time you see it because you know what's coming. And then, like, you're like, I remember watching that movie with my friends that didn't quite get it, and they're like, that was dumb.
Yeah, it's a little drier.
Yeah,
some
it's
more
a little
stuff
dry,
a
little
about.
Subtle, a little different. Like, there's not really a huge like he doesn't get the girl back. Like, yeah. It's a much more realistic comedy. And I'm like, oh shit, there's more to comedy than just someone falling down or making a fart noise. Yeah. But I never like laughing so hard at scenes like when Vince Vaughn's giving the speech about being a bear and like how you're a big bear with these claws and these hands and like doing that speech to my friends and they're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, no, you have no idea how funny that is. And then that guy becomes one of the biggest comedy stars.
Yeah.
10, 15 about years sad. Later.
I was the whole time you're talking about the movie, I'm like, I couldn't fucking think of what the goddamn guy's name is.
It's weird. Jurassic Park 2 and then popped my brain. Yeah. Like, that's been playing Luke nonstop. Wilson. I'm like, wow, he like started out not as a comedy guy. Well, I mean, like,
Swingers, but he like Swingers was but that.
Like, then he's like, I'm going to hit the mainstream and really make my mark.
Right. Because
Jurassic Park 2, Lost World, here I come.
Because people did like him from Swingers and they're like, oh, what can we put him in? And he Psycho. Really wasn't. Yeah, so he did like Psycho in the Cell.
No, he did even. He did.
The Cell was fantastic.
He did Thrillers way before that, too.
Okay.
Like Clay Pigeon and shit.
Oh, yeah, that's way back.
You're
yeah, because he was trying to.
I love Vince Vaughn. Swingers. Yeah, let's say he's got awesome. The Vince
So then he
Vaughn
does that, and then he gets. And then he goes back and does another thing with Maid, and then people didn't really like Maid, but I fucking love Vince Vaughn in Maid because he goes from being the charismatic guy to the more real, even more realistic guy that's just a. Straight fuck up. And I fucking loved his character in that.
So were you into stand up too back then?
Yeah, I was into stand up lesser at that point, but I really liked Steve Martin, like I said. That was like an album, like his albums were things I listened to. I listened to Jeff Foxworthy's, like my brother had that from like I don't know, one of those like CD clubs, like Columbia House or whatever.
Yeah, you get like 10 albums, 99 cents.
Yeah, so I just had it, and I'd like put it on. And, dude, his jokes were, you know, I was 13, maybe 12. They were fucking tight. Like, and those were good, well-written jokes.
If there's something to be said about them, you don't get that famous without being, like you said, tight and on it and mass appealing.
Right.
I guess. And there's... That whole, and then it's he's built a genre out of it.
He built a genre out of it, and he also, I mean, he just had comedy that was written well. Like, it was well-written comedy. It was performed, the timing, all those different things. You know, it wasn't just about the, you might be a redneck if, but it was the story about his family going to Hawaii and his kids just ruining all this shit, and I'm like, man, I don't even have kids, but I can like I remember ruining my parents' shit. Like, I broke some of their stuff, so there is a relatability to it. And then there's also let's see, like the Sandler CDs, which aren't stand up, but
there's a lot of sketch
in there
to them.
And then just watching like Evening at the Improv and stuff like that. And then later, when they started coming out with all the Comedy Central Presents, my friend and I, a couple of my friends, we'd record those. And watch them again and again. So, like, Dane Cooks was one of the ones that stood out. Nick Swartzen.
I was about to say, Nick Swartzen was always my favorite. Like, I downloaded that shit on LimeWire just so I could hear it over and over.
Yeah, I had that. Like,
shit.
I ripped that as an audio.
Have you heard his new one he just put up?
I have not heard the new one.
It just came out, like, last week. I watched it illegally on the internet. But
is it good?
Fucking stellar, dude. I mean,
I'll check it out.
It's exactly Nick Swartzen. Like, he even calls it out in the set. Like, what'd you come here for? Like, political jokes? Or did you come here for, like, of course, I'm Nick Swartzen. I'm going to do beer and dick jokes.
To me, his best stuff was that first Comedy Central Presents. And it probably has to do with the fact that I was at the perfect age for that.
Yeah.
All that stuff to be super relevant to me. The ridiculous funeral, the impressing your grandma,
the grandma
with your strength,
the milk, and
like just all that stuff was so silly and goofy, but still had some cleverness to it. And then he got more into like pot and
drinking
and partying. It's and stuff like that. It's still very funny.
Yeah, a lot of it's still like the drinking girls. He hits that every one of his albums and specials since those early ones.
Yeah.
It's about 15 minutes of just girls drinking for a point and drunk girls and. Like you said, it's still funny, but the original humor and a lot of that came with even the Dane Cook early ones too. Like when that shit hit, it was massive. That guy had mass appeal for everybody.
You know what I mean? and then he got
too mass appeal.
Like not even too mass appeal.
Well, it's
he
imploded. Like he got too big, and then like just.
He didn't have anybody to check him. He didn't have anybody to say, Dane, let's rework that bit. Yeah. Let's make it a little more. relatable, make it not just this weird tangent. Like, we know you can go on these crazy, weird, ridiculous speeches, but maybe let's pull back into reality a little bit.
Yeah, I remember offending people or something. Like, right before, like, he you stopped hearing from him.
What?
It was like, I remember reading an article about him, like, he was out at in L.A. and he was, like, offending people in the crowd, like, just, like, or maybe just...
I heard a lot that he was overstepping on comedians and stuff like that. He'd go, like, into a room and just, like, just completely, just like, knock off all the comedians that were going, like, do an hour and a half set.
He might have been losing his shit on hecklers.
Oh, okay.
Might have been what it was.
And that, like, shit happens.
Hmm. You got a good heckler story?
I've yelled at some. I don't want to tell those stories again. But I just I like talking about other comics more than I like talking about me. We were talking about Dane.
Yeah.
Doing, so, like, he kind of bloated. But then there's also guys like Todd Barry.
Mm.
Like, that was how I was introduced to him. And I thought he was just as funny. Jim Gaffigan, like, he had one of the earlier ones. Like, all those guys. Regan, like, I got into him. So, I don't know. I just started... consuming mass amounts of stand-up.
I fell in love with the Sklar Brothers on the Premium Blend. They had like a 7 minutes on
that. One.
And then I caught them from Cheap Seats, and you know what I mean? So sports
and then
comedy.
Chappelle. And Chappelle's Killing Them Softly.
Killing Them Softly.
I feel like
was huge.
That might be the first like HBO stand-up special that I ever watched. And I was probably 17 when I watched it. And
that was one of those you'd
so
watch
fucking
over
funny.
And
yeah,
over
I could watch it
over.
Today, and it's still just
baby,
as relevant.
The baby on the corner and all that shit. Yeah,
so funny. The baby on the corner, Sesame Street. I remember trying to tell people the Sesame Street bit, like the count was a pimp. One, how many times was I smacking? One, two, three, and they're just like, "What are you talking?" I'm like, "Man, I don't have what Chappelle has."
And then
I am not. I did not get the delivery down.
And there was a bunch of them back then. Comedies was a lot of fun then. I really don't see. Does HBO even still hit you with hours that aren't like Bill Maher or?
Yeah, they'll throw some out there. I mean, like they've done some with Louis. I know Jim Norton's done some. Jim Jefferies, so, like they've got some good hours they put out. I can't.
I'd say Netflix kind of is where everybody kind of
drops
that's their
thing Netflix
now.
Has definitely been
you
the
just kind of because you can instead of having HBO get half of what you're doing, you can independently release it through Netflix and basically take everything but the 7% or whatever they take or
well,
however
net,
much. Or
I think. The way Netflix works is they just buy it off you for a certain amount, and then you just re-up
you
that contract every 6 months or whatever based on how well it does. So
you get without the... but it's a lot
like how
more
we're talking about it. It's like, we actually fucking know. We have no idea how Netflix works.
I was like, that's really interesting.
It's, it's a lot more independent release,
it is.
Though. You can get... It's like, I mean...
You find a production company that'll shoot it or whatever.
You have how many albums now? Two, three...
Three, I think.
And
I have Just Say Your Jokes, Sarcasm Bus, and then Crowded, and then The Perfect Tens. But those aren't like an out. Those are like a project.
The Perfect Ten, that was a really cool idea that you had. You wrote 10.
Great idea, poor execution.
Go ahead. You can tell us a little about that.
Perfect Ten was where I challenged myself to write 10 new minutes of material every month, and not just write it, but kind of craft it, and then film it, and audio record it, and like put it out there for people to just see how I could... If I could do that every month, and I did that for a full year, so I released 2 hours of material within a year. No, it's not done, but it was fun to see if I could do it, and I thought overall I did a pretty decent job with it. Like, there's none that I look that I watch and I really can't stand the material. There's lots of changes that I've made. There's stuff that was just only relevant to that time in my life.
Felt rushed at all trying to get it done?
Oh, I was always feeling rushed. Like, I mean, there was jokes that I wrote the day of that I'm just like, I'm going to throw it out there and hopefully it gets a laugh.
It's an impressive way to keep your material fresh, though.
But also, you're like killing the material, too, because you're putting it on the internet and all that stuff. Like, you're just like, here you go. It's like, here's my 10 minutes. Fuck, that was a really good joke. I could have used that in a special.
Well,
like,
and I'll take some of that stuff and I'll
recraft it
and still put it in a special because it's not like it has millions and millions of views. It's got a few thousand views. And so I think the people that have seen it will want to see how it's evolved. Like, the people that are seeing it are real comedy fans. And they're going to be like, oh, well, I saw that. And now let's see how it's it fits into like an hour long set.
I feel that even when I like we were talking about the Nick Swartz and his first Comedy Central Presents, that might have been 2000 or 2001, and then his album didn't come out till 2007, and it still had half those jokes,
right?
And a lot of them are crafted a little bit; they're a little extra different tags and things like that. And that's something exactly like you said, a nerd will sit there and be like, "Oh, well, I remember that, how that went." Because
the people that are still buying albums and consuming things at that level are the people that are collectors and they're fans, and they want the special features. Like you know, I don't really buy CDs or DVDs anymore, but if I buy like a movie on Netflix or not Netflix, like Amazon, and they have the option for special features, I'll pay for the I want the one with special features. Like I want to, and I'm going to watch them all, and I want to see all the different stuff. And like with all the shit that's with like Jurassic World right now, it's a massive movie and there's a lot of extra stuff to consume and little Easter eggs. And that appeals to that next level fan. Yeah, it isn't just like, oh, I got to see Chris Pratt fight dinosaurs. It's like, I got to see how they took this, like, resurrected this franchise that got fucked over by a couple of shitty sequels.
Was a fantastic way they did it, too. I love how they're like, well, we have to make a new dinosaur so people will come back and see it. I was like, wow, this is very, like, meta, like how they're talking.
Which is kind of how they tried to do 3, but they didn't do it right.
Yeah, the execution of that was terrible.
Ultrasaur or whatever the fuck it was supposed to be in that
one. I can't. Ultrasaur. We'll go with that.
Yeah, I don't remember what
Ultrasaur.
I kind of
might STD ever. Yeah.
Ultrasaur. Jesus, that's a bell one. So, where were we there?
All right, we're all over the place.
Yeah, like with the Jurassic World, and I was like, I've seen that.
But I wanted to ask you, one of the things that I was like impressed about hearing is how much you spent your time on the road. Like you definitely, instead of spending your time just hitting here, waiting for something to come to you, you wanted to hit the road to become better. Am I right?
It was kind of a necessity at the time when I started doing stand up. There was only a couple places to get up, and so I'm like, well, I'll just take. I gotta go get paid, and so like I read Dave Schwenson, who's like a Cleveland guy, and he worked at the Hollywood Improv a million years ago. He wrote a book, and I read that, and it was only relevant to 80s comedy, but I didn't know that, so I took some of those approaches and tried to implement that, and then I took I just kept writing jokes and going up and like building like a 5-10 minute set. And then the only comedy class I took was Mike Veneman's. And I just basically took that because Mike knew me and it was how I could get into the funny stuff when it was still hilarities in Cuyahoga Falls. And so I took that class, crushed the fucking showcase that I did on that. Pete started giving me guest sets and work.
And yelling at you.
And yelling at me.
Apparently.
And getting angry like,
I don't even go in there in nice jackets, because if you go in there in a nice jacket, he just assumes you're ready.
Hands
to
you
tell
a microphone.
Jokes.
Yeah. It's not
He's
even
like,
real
one. Oh, you're going on stage, big boy. What are you doing? I'm like, oh, no, man. I'm just here to watch.
But the guy gives people chances.
He
more.
Does. He's Definitely. Ready to give you one just right. because you're wearing a nice jacket.
I know. But you need comedy club owners like that.
Yeah,
that are,
you do.
Because I learned a lot of lessons on his stage, and I will always be thankful for Pete for giving me the chance to learn those lessons. And so when I go back there and I get to perform on a Saturday show, and I'm headlining in the room's
just
full.
Did a couple headline shows there.
Yeah, I'm actually doing a couple on the 23rd and 24th of this month, just some fill-in dates.
Nice.
I get to work on a longer set, which I don't get to do as much when I'm not on the road. But I get to you know, go up and perform in front of a crowd that's paid to be there, and crush it. And Pete appreciates that I can entertain the people that are paid. And that's why on a, a Wednesday when it's an off night and it's, free tickets, he'll give me the leeway to go up there and fuck around and figure out some new material and do stuff like that and fuck with the crowd and fuck with other, comics, whatever ends up happening that night. But he's got a lot of leeway for people to get better creatively.
When was your first show?
First show was at the Rose Theater in Medina, which is like the old movie theater. Like it's the one that's like on the square. And that was May of 2004. Mm-hmm. It was probably like May 7th or 8th or something like that. It was like a Thursday. And
open mic, so or like a
you're in a, you open mic. It was a theater. Yeah. It was an open mic, though.
Yeah, it was an open mic. But they closed it as a movie theater and mm-hmm. then reopened it as like a concert venue. And they'd have some concerts there. But then they do like improv and stand up on Thursdays. Mm-hmm. And so I just signed, like, I was working for my dad right when I got excommunicated from the Mormon church mm-hmm. during the mission. And
you could dive into that, maybe?
Yeah. I'm all over the place. I was like,
that sounds interesting.
Yeah. These are just all, like, my interview stories that I get tired of telling. So I try to tell them in different ways just to make myself interested
in
myself.
Yeah, let's say I heard it on the Matt Brady podcast, if you want me to sum it up. You basically said you were drinking and fucking and partying.
Yeah, basically. So. Basically, I did a year of mission the way you're supposed to, and I lost my mind. Mm-hmm. And then I slowly started breaking the rules. And then I got to the point where I was, first alcohol I ever drank was while I was a Mormon missionary.
Yeah.
Lost my virginity while I was a Mormon missionary.
Is it just from traveling you run into people or something? Or hey, like,
well, you're an American in the Philippines. You can fucking just fuck whoever
you want. Do whatever you want.
Like a girl will be like, hey. And I'd be like, hey. And then we just go do stuff.
Just sneak off.
And honestly, I didn't fuck that many. Mm. I really only had sex with one girl. But because they're like Catholic girls most of the time. That's like the predominant religion over there. So they would just be like, all right, well, I don't want to lose my virginity, so I'll just blow you or things like that, which is fine by me. I wasn't upset with that. But, I make it a little more grandiose when I'm on stage.
Anal.
Yeah. Not in the Philippines, man.
Fair enough.
That shit's dangerous.
Yeah.
So I got excommunicated, was working for my dad doing construction for about a month, and I was miserable. Mm-hmm. And I was working with my older brother, and he accidentally kicked like a bolt off of like the top of like a cinder block wall, and it swung, like it flew down and like hit me on the top of the head, and then swung around and chipped one of my teeth.
Jesus,
and
holy
I was just,
shit.
And then like I threw my back out like later that week. I was just fucking done with manual labor. I'm like, I'm not gonna do this my whole life. Yeah. I can't. Fucking standing.
So it bounced off your head and swung around?
Yeah, like it hit the top of my head and then
boomeranged.
Just like fucking, like, because it's like about a 12 inch bolt. So, like, just the way the rotation of it just fucking knocked my chipped my tooth. And so that sucked. I had had it. And so I'm like, I got to figure something else. And there was an ad in the paper for this open mic at the Rose Theater in Medina. Mm. And it was actually this place, you know, like I said, it's like old movie theater that was turned into a concert venue. It was owned by my friend's dad, Justin Boothroyd's dad. I can't remember what his dad's name was, but he was trying to make something cool happen in Medina. Like he kind of put all his money into it. He wanted to bring in bands and have comedy and have some culture in a little,
the type of guy you need in a
little target like based town where everything is become very commercial, and he's trying to do something to bring some atmosphere back to downtown Medina, and I appreciated that. And I went in there and I did the open mic, and there was about 15 people, 7 or 8 of which were comics, in a 250-seat theater, and it's like this big giant stage, like it's like amazing lighting, but goddamn. Did I, like, you tell jokes in a place that big that's that empty, and for whatever reason, I thought I did well. there was some people laughing, but I mean, it was just like, we were all just being so kind to each other, because we're like, if we don't laugh, we're all just going to set this place on fire. Like, so I got a few weird laughs, and it encouraged me, and then I started going to the improv in Cleveland. Had auditions on Monday at noon, and I went and did that, and that was the second time I was ever on stage, and I fucking ate an asshole on that stage. Like I was so nervous and just mumbling, but I just kept going, and so I just kept going and just like finding open mics around town. So I do like coffee shop open mics where it's all music, and I just go up and tell a few jokes, and then I go to, I found, you know, I met comics, and they'd be like, oh, go here, go here, go here. And I just grounded out for a little while. And then I was like, all right, well, if I'm going to make this work, I got to go on the road. So within about a year into doing comedy, I took a road trip. That was probably, it was January, started May, so it was January of 2005. I took a road trip across the country and just, I had some money saved from, like, I was still working for my dad from time to time. And I just drove to different cities where I had was able to just, like, scam a guest set.
You have missionary friends?
No, what
I... You were staying in houses?
Like, I had some family...
Any Philippines that made it across?
No. Yeah, well, I had friends from, you know... I had family members and, like, that lived out west because of my Mormon connection. So I'm like, all right, I'll go out to Utah.
Boom. Salt Lake City.
Yeah, like, and I'll just, like, drive out there and then drive back and, like, take, like, some, like, winding routes. I had family in Colorado Springs. There was comedy clubs there. And so, and then Mike Veneman helped me get some guest sets at like, comedy clubs like Crackers, which was, like, a legit comedy club. And I did a guest set, and I did okay. But I was only, like, an MC at that point, and they just used local people, so they didn't really book me. But I still, like, was encouraged by how well I did. And then I did another one in this place called it's in a pizza place in Sioux City, Iowa. Which is way the fuck out there.
It's like, starting to look really nice. We just went through there like a year ago. It's starting to look really nice in Sioux City,
good.
Iowa.
It's like, they've had some...
No, Sioux Falls, South Dakota is my favorite town.
Yeah, but I have no idea why. Jesus
I like
Christ.
Sioux Falls, South Dakota, man.
Yeah, I fucking... Done
we played in
weeks
a place
and
called,
weeks in those places,
and we did a place called T South Dakota. It was just in a weird warehouse. They just propped the door open and had impromptu shows there. It was one of those things where we were at like a biker bar. We just met two kids. And they're like, hey,
yeah, they're picking up drums. They're like, our drummer's not gonna have enough drums, so we're gonna pick up these ones from the shed. And we're like, where are you playing? They're like, well, tomorrow in T. And we're like, okay, can we jump on that show? We got a date canceled.
But
yeah, like, yeah, come
that's
on.
One of the reasons why I admired hearing you just being like, I'm packing up and just going, because if you want to achieve something and you want to get good at it, or you, I mean, you can't
you gotta throw yourself into
you
it.
Can't play this, the same.
You can't
like,
be timid.
Five in,
you have to not worry about being broken down in Kansas.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And that's what it is. So I did this guest set in fucking Sioux City, Iowa. And I'm, you know, less than a year into comedy, but I have some good material. And I go up and the place is packed. Like it's it maybe fits 100 people in this little room in the back of a pizza place. But it's like brick walls. It's like the perfect comedy club setup. So I go up there. I do 5 minutes and I just fuck. I think I did 10 minutes, but I fucking crushed it. And the guy that owned the booking company that I was auditioning for was like, where'd you lose him? And like, but it was like a nudge. Like he knows I fucking crushed. And he and his son, who was the one that was going to deal with me, Jeremy, comes up and he's like, hey, man, just send me your dates on Monday. I'm like, okay. Like, I knew what the fuck I was doing. Like, I had no idea what that meant. So I just, on Monday, I just called the number that I had called to set up. And I'm like, so what do you mean by, like, I'll send you my dates. So where do I send those? Like, you got a P.O. box or something like that? He's like, no, I got some dates for you. Just tell me if you can do them. And I'm like, okay. And he gave me 2 weeks of, like, feature opener work, which like for a lot of road stuff like that, like one-nighters, you're doing you're the opener. Like there's not really like an MC. Like there might be someone that like will say, hey, this is the guy, but the crowd's not warm. So I'm doing 35 minutes usually to open up the show, and then I bring up the headliner who does an hour. And so he's like, all right, I got these shows in Minot, North Dakota, and then you know, they're attached with other little smaller towns than Minot, North Dakota. And then the week after that, you go to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and give you $500 for both of those weeks. Like, you'll get that total. And I was like,
yeah, that's a fucking.
Like, I'm like, cool. Like, I tried to play it off like, cool, this is this is fine. And I hung up the phone, and I was staying at my cousin's house in Utah, and I'm like, I'm gonna get $500 And my like Mormon, and she's like, "What? You're gonna get how much?" I'm like, $500 And she's like, where? I'm like, North Dakota. But it doesn't matter because it's still it's going to
happen.
It's
better than working in Burger King for $300 for the same week. You know
right.
I mean?
Yeah. It's like and they pay for my hotel. Mm. And like when, like the first time I checked into a hotel when I was getting paid to do comedy, I'm like, I'm one of the comedians performing here. They told me that I have a room. My name is Bill Squire. I have my ID and my credit card. And I'm like, this is what they told me. Like, this is what they told me. If I have to pay for it, I'll pay for it. But they told me that it was paid for.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, it's here's your room. And they're
like, yeah, dude, just stop bothering us. Yeah. Go.
I'm like, this is amazing. And, like, I remember, like, walking through the hotel because I was 22, 23 years old when I started working on the road. And, like, I remember, like, I looked like a little kid still. Like, I was, like, a chubby, like shaved head, no facial hair, like, no, like, even, like, masculine features at that point. Like, I was just I was, like, baby Huey. And I'm walking through this hotel feeling like the fucking hottest shit because I was being paid to be there. And like I had my like rolling suitcase, and I remember like people seeing me like walking by me, and they're like probably thinking like, oh, who's this kid? This weird kid just staying in a hotel,
going to
and
dad's
I just,
room,
like all I, yeah, exactly, going to dad's room or whatever. And I just wanted to like tell people like I'm by myself, I'm an adult, I can vote, and I tell jokes, and people give me money
I'm
for
getting
it.
$500 like fucking dollars.
I was
this
so
week.
Excited by it, and then I realized that $500 when you drive to North Dakota is a wash. Like you're not making any money, but I didn't give a fuck because I got there and I got to the next gig, and when I got home, I maybe had $100 or $200 bucks, and I hung on to that until I could go out and
do
more stuff.
Eat light, you live frugal.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you find ways to like you wake up and you steal the breakfast and stuff like that.
The breakfast,
yeah, like well, yeah, like
he's
you,
putting
you know,
it in
hotels.
His pockets.
I would take whatever I could. Like I take all the fruit. Like I would take whatever I could to make ends meet, and you know it was fine.
Yeah,
it was fucking adventure. It was awesome.
Did the missionary life prepare you for that? Were you
I already knew how to live out of suitcase, and the mission you never in any like you get transferred to all these different areas every few months.
Were you doing a lot of flying or driving?
Driving, like we wouldn't drive, but we'd take public transportation or whatever. But then, like if we had to get transferred, they'd have transfer day where everybody would come down to like the central mission office, and then you'd go back in like taxis or jeepneys or whatever the fuck, buses, whatever. So you learn to live really light, and I really appreciated that. Like I liked, like there was a lot of aspects, a lot of things that I learned from that mission beyond just Filipino chicks like American dudes that like apply to my life, and that like I like they were things that I liked. I like living that way. I liked not having a lot of things. I liked being able to kind of go where I wanted at a moment's notice, and like not have to be like, oh, I need all these.
Like being nomad, basically.
Kind of nomadic. And like, and so then when I started doing comedy, it was that similar kind of lifestyle, times a thousand, because
without
I was
the rules.
Doing without the rules and with. I mean, there's still rules that I had to like imply just to you know, save money and have some discipline. Like I wasn't like a partying comic the first 3 years. Like I didn't drink. I kind of still had a lot of my Mormon values because I hadn't.
Also, it saved you money too,
right? Yeah. And it did, and it also made it. You know, I didn't want to fuck it up too. I didn't want to get drunk. You know, OVI, that kind of thing. Because it's one thing to get OVI in Akron, but when you get one in, upstate New York, and that's not where you're from, you have to, like, that's a whole other kind of nightmare, world. And that'll fucking end your career if you can't get back out there. So I just wanted to get better at comedy, so I wrote a lot, and I performed a lot, and I pushed myself to get better, and it was... And eventually I did get somewhat better, and then like I saw the progress, and I just kept pushing, and then like I started getting work, like I got work in comedy clubs away from Ohio before I got anything here.
The work
so,
here.
So I'd go out and do these like one nighters and like these runs, and then like I'd work at I got some work in Colorado and shit like that. And I just went out and did whatever I could. And it was good. And then I started working at like the Improv here. And then I started working at Hilarities and the Funny Stop and all those places. And
now did you
just built a
did
little,
you use
life for myself?
Did you use the clubs around here to work on your material for the road or vice versa?
It was more like vice versa at first. Like I'd work on things on the road because I was already there.
Yeah.
And then I come back here and
have your killer set.
They, yeah, and like credence. And then they're like, oh shit, Bill got better.
Mm. Yeah. So. They give you more credence. They're like, oh, he's traveling. We should book him on more shows. He's obviously doing stuff out of state.
Yeah, well, they didn't really give too much a shit about that right because on. There's a lot of people that travel. Like, it was about being funny.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're that early in, like, but they saw that I was taking it serious and that I was improving.
Yeah.
And that I would, you know, make the changes. Like, one of the stick, like, I was kind of a schlubby, slobby dude.
Mm.
And Hilarities was, you know, it's a nicer club. And they wanted me to dress a certain way. And I don't like being told what to
put
do.
Put on a nice jacket.
And I had to dress a way, a certain way for, you know, my Philippines time. And so I didn't like that. But I adjusted myself so I could work there. Because I wanted to be able to work there. So, you know, I was like, all right, fuck, I'm wearing a jacket or doing something to look nicer. Like, I don't mind looking nice. I just didn't have any clothes. So I got some. And it was, you know, and then I started working there a lot. And it was awesome because I get to work with legit headliners.
Yeah, I was about to say the comedians coming through the...
yeah, like the Cleveland Improv, Hilarities, Funny Stuff. Like, you got to work with some people that have done some shit and, like, are still relevant, you know.
Now, who were some of the people that you you enjoyed the most or took a liking to? You, anybody like that you worked with... anything like that, or is it just that you got to be
I got to
shows?
Work with Tosh right before he got super famous. Like, it was I got to work with him. I've gotten to work with like Lavelle Crawford. I got to work with you guys know Breaking Bad, you know, the big fat security guard.
He's
a comic. His name's Lavelle Crawford. He was on Last Comic Standing, stuff like that. He's done pretty well for himself. Patrice O'Neill, like, I got to work with that dude. I got to work with
these guys come take you under the learning tree at all when you come off stage?
Bobby Kelly was the guy that was instrumental in like helping me kind of just giving me a nice little ego check where he took me on the road a little bit. I moved to New York City for a cup of coffee and he was like being great to me and I fucking loved him for it. And then I that's when I met my wife that's now my ex-wife, and so I moved back to be with her. And he, you know, he's still a dude that I can call and ask advice for if I really need to.
Yeah.
I don't bother him that often.
No,
but he's a really good guy. And so like working with Bobby Kelly and like Tosh and Patrice O'Neill, I got to work with all those guys at the Cleveland Improv. And like Patrice is like one of my fucking he's one of the best guys.
Yeah, he was.
And I got to middle for him and do like 30 minutes. And then the girl that was opening is this lady named Miss Pat, who's like, she's blowing up right now. So it's just cool to you never know who anybody's going to be. She was, you know, just starting. She'd probably been doing it 3 or 4 years at that time. And I'd worked with Roy Wood Jr. before he was a headliner. He's on Sullivan and Son. So like, there's a lot of guys that I got to work with. And then like guys like Tom Papa, who I've worked with at Hilarities, who like, he was really, really great to me. And Attell before, like before I was on the radio, I got to work with Dave Attell, and he's fucking phenomenal. Like all these guys that just are like heroes, and I get to, and then like even like legends like George Wallace, like there, you know, that dude performs in Vegas every week, and I got to open for him. Like, it was cool. So one of his crowds did not like me at all.
Yeah. So you went working on the road, and you spent how many years doing that?
About 8 years.
8 years, wow. Just putting the pavement to the grind. And you did you like go on tours with guys? Was it like
no?
Hey,
I was never like
runs. Or
I
nothing like
I would
or?
Just book whatever I could myself. Like there was sometimes I really the only guy that ever kind of said, "Hey, you can come out with me," was Robert Kelly. But most of the time, I would just book my
Why
own
do I,
shit.
I'm trying to think of that name.
Robert Kelly was on Torgasm with
Torgasm with and okay.
He did that and then he's got his own like podcast network and he's been on like Opie and Anthony and like he's a New York guy
and
like
you
the seller.
Did, you did Opie and Anthony things as well too.
Yeah, I did a contest on Opie and Anthony called car crash comedy contest, and I won that, and that was cool.
And wait, when was that?
That was 2009 or 10.
What gets you 11. To enter something like that? They were
asking for applicants, and I'm like, oh,
you're I'm ready for that kind of thing.
Well, I had done it years before. They had done it years before, and it was right when I moved to New York, and I signed up. Well, I didn't even sign up. I just showed up for the one in Philadelphia, and like the spot was if you do well, then you get to perform on their virus comedy tour with like Bill Burr and all these fucking like amazing comics. And I went up there in front of this really hostile Philadelphia crowd, which I guess they can be kind of mean there.
Yeah.
And I just went up there all like, Santa Claus, here's a funny joke, and just fucking ate my ass. And it's
a lot of people yelling at you.
Yeah. Like from the moment I walked on stage, like didn't even give me a chance. Like, fuck you. I hate you. Like, and I'm like, well,
because you weren't Bill Burr.
Right, because that's what they were doing. Like, that was the idea. So then a few years, like, that fucking crushed me. Then a few years later, I got the, they did it, like, in a more controlled environment at, like, the Sirius XM studios. And they, like, they threw some guys out there that weren't that, like, they were, like, newer comics to try and, like, they vetted the comics a little bit more than they had in the past. And we're looking for a really decent comic. And it came down to the four finalists. The five finalists were, from everyone that submitted, were me, Ramon Rivas, from here in Cleveland. Brian Mitchell, from Akron, which is weird. Like three, like the...
Yeah, the Northeast Ohio trio.
Yeah, and then Seton Smith, who is on... was on the Mulaney show that just got canceled. But he's a really funny
canceled
comic.
Already?
Yeah,
that was a good show.
Was it?
Yeah, they had Martin Short was hilarious on it. Yeah.
See, I didn't know anybody that watched it and liked it.
Yeah, it was
here you go. Yeah. The whole fan club.
Found
but Seton Smith, he's the black guy with the spiky hair. And then the other guy's a dude from Indianapolis named Mark Anderko. So I was up against those five. Brian Mitchell didn't actually make it out there because he was on a Greyhound bus that broke down. And I told him, like, dude, just ride with me.
Yeah,
and he's like, "Nah, there's this girl." So he was like trying to get out there a little early for this girl, and didn't work out.
All ruined.
Yeah, so he didn't make it out, but it was, you know, I did pretty well and won that contest.
You said that was cool. Like they brought you guys into their studio.
Yeah, they had like a performance studio where like they had an audience and stuff like that, and it was a little nerve wracking.
Like 20-30 people, or
yeah, something
bigger?
Like that.
All right. And you just went up there, and you said you won that, or you just performed.
I won that.
In it.
I won that. Yeah.
And what did you get out of that one?
I got like $2,000 and
nice.
some
exposure.
Yeah, some exposure.
And did you do Cleveland radio things at all before that, or
not? I think I had called into the Maxwell show a little bit, because when I first started doing comedy, Maxwell had just started doing radio in Cleveland, so he would come out to some of the open mics and shit and like hang out and like get to know some of the local talent he had some of the other guys
would
on.
Do like Dalton and Studio
Dalton and Studio and stuff like that,
a couple of the guys call in to Joe Howard and a couple of them,
so yeah, they were comedy friendly too, and then he got a little weird towards the end, but he was never a bad dude to me, and Stansbury and I are still on good terms. Like that's he's a solid dude.
He still
dude.
Does a good show too. I'd listen to it in the morning sometimes if I'm up that early. I'll kick it on iHeartRadio, and he's doing a great show now too. But so when did you start working with the? You did the Alan Cox comedy tour previously.
Yeah, I did it the second year that they had it. Just because, you know, Chad was a comic and I'm a comic and we knew each other. We were pretty good friends at one point. And so he asked me to be on it. Well, Alan asked me to be on it, but like at Chad's recommendation. And so that's how I kind of got to be part of that whole thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when he lost his job, Alan asked me and, you know,
I was about to say,
like,
you guys,
Brian Mitchell.
I can't remember
like,
if they rotated anybody for a couple days.
It was me,
days.
Brian Mitchell, Mike Farrell were kind of the three that they were taking like a serious look
at. It was like when Jackie left the Howard Stern show and they had Artie and a couple of them. And,
it's pretty standard. Well, even like early, like Alan Cox show, they had like people rotating him before Chad too, right?
Yeah, well, they had like Charlie and Dalton, I think, were the only ones that.
Okay.
And then Chad got it.
Chad just stuck.
Yeah.
And there was, I actually tuned into Alan Cox today and I heard you for, I was listening for about a half hour. And there was something I've always thought about when you joined the show. It definitely is a little different atmosphere. I might be wrong in this, but I've never tuned in and heard you attacking, yelling, that type of thing.
Just
which,
not the dude that well, I am.
I mean, in that slot, I mean, Stansberry would do those type of things too, where he would get amped about something, start yelling, Chad Zumok to that type of thing, and
like
then
loose cannony.
You're a lot more laid back, and it was funny because in this segment I heard today was you guys talking about how you are the guy who just stays, how did you put it, under the radar.
Yeah, that's what I like to be.
You were the under the radar guy, and I enjoy that. I was like, that's exactly his kind of his. I've like enjoyed his place on that show as right. the under
you
the
know,
radar
and,
guy.
And it might be, people might perceive it as like I'm maybe more of a pussy. Yeah, I am, because I'm not the guy that's going to go say the mean thing to the tough guy. I'm going to say it under my breath yeah. as I exit the room. Like, that's kind of who I am. Like, I like, you know, comics make the jokes in the back of the room. Like, that's when we make each other like. So I like that situation more. Like, I like kind of doing things without, you know, like, doing stand-up, I like the spotlight on me. But, like, in a group setting, I'd rather just sneak that one thing in
the
there.
One thing in there. Yeah. You got Alan Cox, who guides the show, and you get to pop in.
Yeah, I'm about to say, it seems like you're kind of, like, calculated with what you say. Like, you don't kind of just, like, jabber to jabber. You're like, this is funny to me, and you'll say it. Doesn't seem
like
you
just, like,
talk to
that,
talk.
And then sometimes it's still not. but you know, sometimes we get a nice back and forth, but when you have a guy that's doing what Alan's done for as long as he's done, I'm not going to try and overpower that, because 9 times out of 10, I just sound like the biggest asshole, because I lose a train of thought. I can't, like, I try to, like, go toe-to-toe with how long he can talk,
especially,
and I can't do it,
because
I'm going to say fuck.
He's an articulate person.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
He might start saying a bunch of words that you don't understand. It just happens listening sometimes, you know what I mean? He's got a lot
of words. Yeah, he's got a lot of words. Yeah, I have to Google a lot of
words.
I'm not going to lie. I Google some words.
That guy has got a lot of words.
During show.
There's anything you can say about that. But the show still got a common success. I don't hear it. I mean, I don't hear people talking bad about it.
There's people that are going to like the old show more because they like that conflict that was there, because that does provide drama and it is engaging. It's just a different show right now. Things change. Things evolve. And I like going to work every day, and so does Alan, and so does Erica. Yeah. And that's our favorite
We
part.
Get a picture. What your show doesn't go on until 3. Do you got to be there at fucking 7 a.m., or you go stroll in at 1?
I don't get in there at 1.
You get to stroll
in
at 1.
Sometimes. And sometimes I'm there at 11. Sometimes they're at, 2:15. Like, I don't have the, like, because I can do prep and stuff like that from home. Like, I'm not... I have a fucking sweet gig. I don't have to do a lot of the heavy lifting on that show. Like, I don't have to do anything other
a
than...
A lot of you just is reacting. That's
me reacting, listening.
listening. That's something I do.
Well, listening to what they do. Yeah, I got you. So I can react to what they're saying. Because, it's not my show. It's their, Alan's show. And I'm at my best when I'm either feeding him or... just having a good line
quick
here and there.
I'm
not a trained radio dude. I've not been doing that for very long, so I'm still learning every day when I go in there. And I feel like I do an okay job, and it's light and it's fun, and I don't feel like you listen to our show and then get out of your car and go, "Oh, fucking had a shitty day," and then made it worse. Like, I'd be like, you listen to our show and be like, hey, even though they're talking about something heavy or something weird sometimes, they at least have, like, a pretty positive spin on it. And, we'll have our bad days or, some days where things aren't clicking. But it's
5 days a week for 4 hours at a time. Yeah, I mean, just the way my mood goes from time to time, I can only imagine.
And it's just a matter of shutting out. Because what I like about that job is, there's nothing about that job that really bothers me. Like, there's some, behind the scenes stuff, some business stuff, shit like that.
Politics.
Not even politics. Just still, again, it's basically me just learning the ropes still of radio, the radio business and whatnot, and how to take advantage of what you can take advantage of in that world. And I'm not like real pushy with like trying to get endorsements and shit like that, because I just, you know, fucking,
you're not doing the lady, your Lady Jane's haircuts.
Bill Squire, they come to me for some stuff, and I've tried to get some stuff, and some stuff has been successful, but again, like, that's not where my focus is. So I just, because again, under the radar, when I'm not pissing anybody off,
Definitely.
I can say stuff and get away with it because I'm not going to piss off a sponsor.
My girlfriend,
because I don't have any.
It's very true. They're not paying me, so I can say whatever.
She had to do ads for the 106.9. She's a bar manager at the Top Shelf Bar, so they're doing ads for it all the time. So they're doing this ads for it all the time, and they were like, they told her, like, we'll give you, it's $1,000 to do your ad with Stansberry. And they were like, we'll add Fantone for $300. And I just feel like, I feel like that's so much fun. Like, I would be like, I'll take add on 300. Like, I would be the add on 300 guy. I would
And then, like, I get to do appearances. Like, I'm doing good. And then, like, I get to do stand up and make more money doing that. Like, I'm doing good. And so I don't want to be greedy and, like, get, like, and then, like, make my life more shitty because I'm trying to be greedy and get things that are going to add aggravation to my life when I have enough of that for my family. And just my day to day, living. So I'm just trying to be happy, and like I have plans, I have ideas of how to do things. Like I'm not struggling. I'll be all, you know.
You seem like you feel like it's funner to take your name from the Alan Cox show and host your show at Barrio.
Oh, absolutely.
And,
because it's my show.
Yeah.
I don't have to, you know, some of those advertisements requires a bit of investment because you gotta. That's time out of your day, and I'm like, well, I was going to do stand-up anyway, so this is fine. Like,
yeah, so you get to go out and do that. So one thing I did want to ask, do you feel bogged down, though, that you can't be out on the road since you're being here? Yeah, I mean, you got this obligation. Obviously, you got to be here 5 days. You can't be like, hey, I'm taking off two weeks.
There was a time when I felt more like that, but now that I'm up in, like, when I was living in Medina is when I first started the show, and it was more difficult for me to get out to do, like, open mics and stuff like that. That was a feeling that I had a little more often. But now that I'm up in Lakewood and, like, I can go do stand-up pretty much every night of the week if I want, I'm good with that. Like, you know, I don't always get to do the longest sets, but I get to go out and do stuff. And I've always been a guy that I'd rather do something. Like, I like doing my prepared, good shit and really killing. Mm-hmm. But I also just love doing stand-up comedy. So I don't mind going to an open mic and just talking to mostly comics and some drunk people and just riffing on whatever happened to me that day, or I just like being on stage.
The road's not calling your name. You're not missing it.
I miss it, but I don't need it at the moment. Like I'll get back out there at some point. You know.
Are you still married now? Are you?
We're in the process. I have my own apartment. We haven't lived together for about 2 months, but we haven't like officially been divorced yet.
So maybe after, if that all follows or goes through with divorce, maybe after that you'll be ready to, you'll be itching for the road more.
But again, it's like, the, you know, I'm still in my daughters, like, they're my stepdaughters, but I'm still in their lives, and they're, you know, I feel like until they are moved out of the you know, like 18 doing their thing, like I don't have that like an overwhelming need to get away.
Yeah, yeah.
Because again, like I can get out and do, and I'll still get out on the road once every month or so. And the road's a fucking brutal place. And so sometimes I'll go and do, like I did a show in Indiana a few weeks ago, and it was fun, but it was only fun for like nostalgic reasons. Because I'm like, oh yeah, this was a fucking nightmare.
Remember this
yelling at drunks in Indiana? Fuck, I don't want to do this.
Did they introduce you as Bill Squire from the Alan Cox show?
No, I guess they sort of did because I took my buddy Cody Cooper to host, but nobody knew who I was. It was just it was in like a shitty little bar in I can't remember where, in some weird place in Indiana. And, you know, that's the only thing to do in that town on that night. So there was, you know, 50 people there and they had a good time and I had a good time. And mostly we just like I'd tell a joke and then I'd explain to them why that was funny. Because they're not the sharpest motherfuckers out there, but yeah.
Hey, you, one thing I did want to ask, you and WMMS, were you a big fan of that growing up as a rock station?
Yeah.
It was like a main station in town.
I remember, like, my MMS memories go like this. I remember when I was a kid, my uncle had a little placard or something like that hanging from his rearview mirror that had a bunch of girls wearing thong bikinis that said WMMS on it. Mm. And so that was like, I'm like that. And then like he played the music and I was like, okay, this is what rock music is. So I'm listening to a lot of the music they still play on there.
Mm.
And I'm like, okay, I like this. I like what's happened here. And then in the mid 90s,
and they were going to get sold.
I'd listen to Brian and Joe in the morning. Mm. And I just thought those dudes were really funny.
Mm.
And so every morning when I was getting ready for school, I would just turn on Brian and Joe. And that was like kind of the first like talk show, because I didn't even know what Howard Stern was at that point. I just liked that these two dudes were kind of funny and like goofy and gave me...
It was like a morning zoo type show.
Like more morning zoo type things. Mm. And they did bits and like, you know, it was silly and, you know, but I liked it because it made me feel like an adult.
Yeah.
And so that was that. And then still listening to the music. And then like 107.9 and 92.3 Extreme, like those were more my speed because I liked the alternative music.
Yeah.
And they didn't play as much of that on MMS. But then when I'd go and work for my dad, it would be MMS or NCX. So a lot of MMS memories of like listening to Sabbath and Juice Priest and all the stuff that they're playing on MMS while I was working construction.
Mm.
And, you know, there's...
And then NCX is kind of the playlist of MMS of the 70s. You know what I mean?
Because MMS has kind of jumped around in like how current their music was. I feel like at that time, like they'd play kind of what they do now, like where they play some old stuff. And then they'd also play like Godsmack or Nickelback, where the fuck was popular in the, you know, late 90s.
Yeah.
What was Godsmack? Yeah. Godsmack. A lot of Godsmack. Oh. A lot of Metallica.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And again, like, it's not anything I was never super into like metal and stuff like that, but I liked it. I didn't consume that. I was more like a punk rock, like pop punk kind of thing, because I just like the humor that was kind of associated with that, like the rebellion.
Yeah.
I didn't see that as much.
I say you're talking our speed. We're all punk, right? He's in a pop punk band now. Yeah. That's what he does. He likes pizza and friends and pop punk.
Love pizza and friends. That's what we're about.
Yeah, I like all those things. What's who are the punk bands that you were?
I was real big into Pennywise.
Like
Blink 182.
That's like where
Newfound Glory, Gutrell. Yeah,
I liked Blink 182 because like their songs were fine, but then when I heard like their live shit,
Mark, Tom, and Travis show, I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah,
but then it was weird because now like, as I'm older, I'm like, they were 35, writing about high school still. That's a weird fucking frame of mind,
right?
And they're all like, I'm gonna make love to you all. I'm like, those are all 14-year-old girls, and they're literally 30. This is fucked.
Yeah, but then you also think like Judd Apatow, you know, his first like Freaks and Geeks, he was a 30-year-old dude writing about being in high school. Like,
oh, definitely. Yeah, you can relate. Yeah, for sure.
So it's just like my first jokes that I did on stage were about being a dork in high school. Like so
it's just weird to like hear him say like kissed every girl in class and he's like 30 fucking five when he wrote the lyric, not like I'm singing old hits. Like this is what they like.
Yeah, but he's still going back. Yeah. Or maybe he does, you know.
Yeah. I'm sure he's reliving the experience. Who am I wrong? Judge, yeah. So my picture's still in her locker, like I'm like, you're fucking, it's insane to me.
On Napster there was some live recordings before they released like the actual
Mark, Tom, and Travis show. Yeah.
Yeah, Mark, Tom, and Travis show. Like it was just like them like bootleg recordings to them live being funny, and my friend played it for me. I'm like, oh, I like that. Yeah, I like that they're playing rock music and saying dirty words and being goofy.
And their videos were always cool.
Yeah,
and
their
stuff.
Videos were funny. So like I appreciated that, and then got into bands like Newfound Glory. Yeah. I liked there were some good drive through record bands like them. I liked Homegrown a lot.
Yeah, Homegrown. Yeah, yeah. Kings of Pop is one of my favorite records.
Yeah,
Act Your Age is good.
And then I got into like our Expandits and then like
You ever get into Phoenix TX?
Fuck yeah, I love Phoenix TX. I got to meet those guys.
I mentioned
guys a
that
times.
To people, and they're like, who? I'm like, Mark Hoppus is in their video. Like, yeah. He really liked them, so I liked them too. Yeah.
Right, and that's what he did. But then, like, their first album was, like, pretty standard, like, pop punk shit. And then,
is that with It's My Fault on it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Lechuza, I don't know how to look, I don't know what it was, but it's the one with the kid, like, the red sky and the kid on the bike.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, that one. Like, they got way better. Like, yeah. Damon was a fucking kick-ass drummer, and
grew into, like, their own.
Yeah, they kind of found their own sound, and that there were some good songs on that. And, like, when I hear that stuff still, I go, oh, yeah.
Yeah, some still.
Nostalgia. Huge, yeah, huge nostalgia card for Blink-182. I just remember myself in, like, a sideways Hurley hat and red Hurley shirt.
Oh yeah, that's
push
the fucking
a Mongo on a skateboard. Right. There's a picture of me 14, just like mid push, just
with like the big khaki jeans.
Yes,
or
yeah,
shorts
very
or whatever.
Very yeah. cargo esque. Yeah, yeah, it was
like, or like I had the Dickies ones. I was like trying to
right on yeah.
And that was Hot Topic. I was Blink 182. So much money because if it wasn't for them,
honestly, they like bred a generation. Yeah.
Because I remember going to there and like they had all like the Transformer shirts and like all the stuff like from my childhood and I could buy it as an adult, and that was like the first place you could kind of do that. Yeah. Now it's everywhere.
Walmart,
yeah.
Target.
But, yeah, but then,
I got like, an AT-AT shirt with all of the like the blueprints for it at Walmart. I was like, I can't not buy it. It's $7.
Right, because it's at Walmart.
It's sick. And there's a ton of them, so obviously people hate this shirt.
Yeah.
Maybe I won't see some asshole that I fucking feel like I would hate if I met him.
My favorite shirt that I got right now. My favorite shirt that I have right now is an Einstein shirt where it's like all these crazy colors of like smoke in the sky. And it's just from Target. And I get more compliments on that shirt than any other fucking shirt. People are like, that's the best shirt. Where'd
exclusive
you get that shirt?
Exclusive Target.
Fucking Target. Like,
Target, bro.
They're, right next to Massimo, I got
stacks
this one.
Stacks and stacks of them. Nobody buys it.
It's not their target audience, I feel. You walked in there and found a gem.
Yeah.
That's what I thought about the AT-AT shirt.
Yeah. And then my best Hot Topic shirt purchase that I ever got was, it said Spear Britney. Thought that it was the funniest fucking shit. And I wear that around, I wear that to like punk shows, and people are like, oh my god, that's hilarious.
Did it have like her album cover on it too?
Nope. Oh, that would have been and fantastic. Like, it was a black shirt with white like Comic Sans font. It's not a cool shirt, but back then I was like, that's a fucking cool shirt.
That's awesome.
Because it was 1999 or 2000. it said Spear Britney, and people just love that fucking t-shirt. And
like I like your stance.
Yeah. Yeah. Shoot, fuck her.
I'm glad you can wear that, so I didn't need to talk to you.
Yeah. Did you get into old school stuff and hardcore at all, or is it just all strictly pop punk?
No, I got into, you know, the Fat Record stuff like that. Like No Use for a Name. I fucking love them. No Effects. Me First the Gimme Gimmes. And then, you know, The Clash. And, and then, like, as I got older, I expanded into like everything. So then I'm like, all right, I got it. And like, even then, the Ramones and Sex Pistols and all
checking
that stuff.
Out Black Flag, things like that.
See, like anything that was like more political never was that. I would just be like, it just didn't. Like, I just never had that political rage. So I never, you know.
Even when it came to like anti-flag, things like that.
Yeah, like that stuff never
anything that was like had American flag on it. You just you
upside down
it.
With a gun in it.
You're like, where's my friends and pizza at?
Yeah, exactly. I want something that's a little.
Why are they
easier.
Talking about poop?
Because I didn't want to be. I just wasn't concerned with that. I was just trying to have a good time, and that's what my rebellion was getting away from the Mormon strict upbringing and just being able to have fun and relax and not be worried about that shit. And then once you get into all that, you know, anti-flag and black flag and anything like that, then you got to learn things. And I'm like, oh, that's what I'm trying to not. I don't want to do that.
Nah. So, but then did you ever play music or anything?
Yeah. Actually, it was in a shitty band for a while called Squire Masonry. Named it after my dad's company.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Just like a shitty, you know, like pop punk, like going into that like screamo type thing.
Yeah, like Finch.
I was a pretty, I fucking liked Finch a lot.
Fucking love Finch.
I was actually, like, that was the one thing. Like, I wasn't a good guitar player. I wrote okay lyrics. But I could do like that scream pretty well. Like I had trained my voice to get that wah, like that nice like howling banshee, like where it's not too high pitched, but very Deftones. It's very Deftones.
He was
like,
on the new Whitechapel record, which is a very heavy band. I don't know if you heard them. Yeah,
I don't know them, but that's I'll listen to
he
it.
He still stays current, yeah.
It's anyway. Good. It's good for you, man. It's good to stay current.
Yeah. So you had that scream down.
I had that scream down. I could fucking do that scream, and I was pretty proud of that.
Mm.
Couldn't actually sing, but I had to scream.
That's all you really need.
Yeah, you're ready for a post-hardcore
like, he's
band.
Passionate.
Right.
Exactly.
I mean, you just lock yourself in a shed. I guess I'm getting really specific.
Is this what you did?
Put drum sets and a guitar and just start going, wah!
Yep. That's basically what we did. Like our first, we didn't have a mic stand for the first like practice that we had, and I just taped a microphone to the post of like a closed tree.
Like, you know, it's surprising you went like for a mic stand. We didn't know how to sing
a song. We didn't need a microphone.
Man, Steven Tyler's got a stand. I'm a fucking rock.
We
won
this whole fucking thing up.
But it was just nice having it. It was more the ingenuity that I was impressed with than anything else. It's like, hey, tape.
We could market this. It's very not easy to use.
Guys, we could.
They have stands.
That's funny. Yeah, but what I was talking about earlier, though, when I was asking you if you enjoyed MMS as a child, was the thing that's good about Alan Cox Show being on that station is that the way radio has become so corporate, and that station means so much to that city as being such a, like, it's the city that broke, I mean, the station that broke Rush, and they had the fucking, like, coffee shop or
the coffee break concerts and shit like that.
I mean, the shit that just people, there's something that
it's a historic station. Yeah, it's a legendary station.
Evan, like you guys there in the afternoon, and even Rover doing his show out of Cleveland there in the morning, it holds a Cleveland pride to the station in a corporate age where all the playlists are being made out of Texas. You know what I mean?
Right. And so now it gets, and I agree. Like I feel like it does give it a little personality still. Mm. Whether, you know, maybe it's not as rock centric, but there is still.
There's people, there's all the people that'll be like, fuck the
unique
talk. If I want to talk, I would listen to NPR.
But it's got some unique, because there's not a lot of, I think we're like the one of two stations or like one of two afternoon talk shows in the entire like iHeart Media empire that's on like on a rock station like to be where we're at like
because
exist.
There's no you guys don't do music you get to sit there for 4 hours and chit chat about life.
And
you,
cool.
Because you guys, it is a lot different show when you only get to pipe in for 5 minutes before you have to throw to
you gotta
the
be
Godsmack
like, bam, bam,
here's
bam,
3 days
bam.
Grace later.
I want to know what y'all think about Rachel DeLisle or whatever the fuck. And then you
text
gotta,
us, maybe we'll read it.
And then you fucking head over. Well, this was a lot of fun, man.
Oh, let's thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Jesus Christ. We might as well take a break so Paul can pee and stuff.
Oh, my God. How'd you know?
Oh, Jesus. Thank you. That's why.
I guess we've had our fun, but it seems the fun is over now, and that's alright. It's alright. Time for me to move along, and after all that's said and done, I'll be alright. And it's alright. Tell me something that's sure to break my heart, 'cause everything's my fault.
Hey guys, Sean here. I just wanted to take a quick second to tell you all about Audible. Audible is a big supporter of Lousy Weather Media, and they're a big fan of you listening to audiobooks. If you're into audiobooks, Audible is your website. And right now, Audible and Lousy Weather Media are partnering up to give you a 30-day free trial and a free audiobook. Let me say that again. Lousy Weather Media and Audible are partnering up to give you a 30-day free trial and a free audiobook. You can get that easily by just going to www.audibletrial.com/LWMpodcast. www.audibletrial.com/LWMpodcast. A free audiobook and a 30-day free trial from Lousy Weather Media only with Audible.
Sean Ast has the crown. I'm the motherfucking king. You better hear me sing. Ooh, that's what I mean, Ming.
Ming from Comic Book Man?
Ming Chen, motherfucker.
Hell yeah.
I came into this
from
the break.
I
thought you were still rapping. I was like, holy shit.
I came into this break from a freestyle. You know I'm wild. I get buck wild. It's late.
Yeah,
I'm just
it is.
Tired. I don't know where these freestyles are coming from. My freestyles is fresh. Sorry.
Just keep happening.
I'm going to make a mess. Bitch, you better come caress.
You said your internet's down, Bob?
Yeah.
I have it.
You probably won't connect to anything.
I'm using it all.
It's 4G LTE on my tablet. It's a caution thingy on my computer. Everything, well. Yeah. So you're not loading anything.
I feel like I'm breathing rarefied air right now.
You are a rarefied air.
Thank you.
So,
what news story you got, Sean?
Did you have fun today?
I had a great time.
Paul.
That was a lot of fun.
Man Show episode 89. I'm Sean Ast.
Paul Wolf.
Bob Compartive.
Damn, I didn't get it up fast
Thank
enough.
God.
That's what you said.
God. And I forgot to turn Phoenix TX off. Alright.
Bobby Compartive.
Oh, I get it. I get it now.
The news. I gotta.
But because I was gonna do Sean Ass, Paul Wolf.
Yeah.
Bobby Compartive. It's late.
Let's have a good day.
No, you want it? You got a news story, Paul? You said, or do you want me to do one of these ones Josie sent me?
Sure, you can do one.
She sent me.
Mine
like
was
three.
About a cat being stuck up in a tree, 80 feet.
Josie sent me like four. Did another
some lady?
Cat, did
some,
another cat save it?
I saw no. Some lady climbed up the tree and had to call the fucking fire department from the tree. Thank God she brought her phone. That's what they said because they couldn't hear her from the ground. And the only reason why they saw her was because of leaves rustling. And then they're like, she was like, I'm not coming down without this fucking cat. I don't know if that's what she said, but I'm assuming. She was 60, Bob. 60 years old. Climbing 80 feet in a tree trying to get her black cat down. And then they were like, all right, we'll go back up for the cat once you're out of the fucking tree. You called us. And then she was like, all right, fine. And then they go back up. And the cat like had wanted nothing to do with them. And then they put some food at the end of the tree and all walked away and the cat came down.
Here's a story relative to you, Paul, because you go to Pittsburgh all the time. Apparently, this is in a neighborhood called Crafton. Where's that at? Google this. Where's Crafton at? Anybody?
Geography!
I keep missing all the fucking sound drops.
And now, for another edition of
good...
Geography!
With Sean Ast.
Sorry.
This is a good place to put that sound drop at the beginning of the episode and you didn't do it.
What?
Geography.
Oh, when he was naming all
Talking
the places he lived?
Philippines.
That would have been a good one, too. There's a few, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess.
We talked about a lot of places.
So, Pennsylvania man accused of robbing a bank with a vibrator wrapped in duct tape.
I was going to guess dildo and vibrator.
He came in saying he had a bomb.
Like an upgrade.
He came in saying he had a bomb and showed wires hanging out from his shirt and demanded cash.
Wait, the dildo was strapped to his shirt?
It was a dildo, yeah.
That's amazing.
After,
it turns on... Like, what's that? He's like, it's getting ready to blow. Give me the money.
The officer came up on the scene and found the guy just parked in a car in a Toyota that they were looking for. They found money in a garbage bag.
The dildo in his ass.
And officers found the bomb. The bomb was a box, black tape, a vibrator, and a cell phone.
He probably didn't flee the scene because he didn't even expect to get that far.
True.
He confessed to the robbery, said he never had a real bomb. Bomb squad came. Robots removed items from his car. So
a robot
had,
had to
fight, fish out a dildo out of this fucking guy's car.
Fucking Wally.
He lost all. What's it say? He lost all of his money on the stock market, and he was desperate, so he went and robbed this place.
Do you think it was his wife's vibrator?
And yeah, that is true. We're like he is,
or maybe
some
he stopped
guy.
By a fucking ambiance and is was like,
married?
"Yo, let me get that
it
purple one."
It doesn't say an article anywhere if he's
was
married
like an
or
older
anything.
Guy?
But yeah, did he? Yeah, he just like stopped and was just, like. Oh, you know what make this I already got the box, I already got the cell phone.
The cell
got
phone
the
makes it
tape.
Legit. I need something that looks like dynamite. Not a toilet paper roll.
Yeah, but well but the, wouldn't
something
the vibrator
with wires inside
wouldn't the
of
vibrator
it.
Be inside the box?
Yeah.
So
this the way this guy's mind works and the way he lost his money in the stock market, I really want to know what it was
he invested in vibrators. He's like, well, I might as well put it back in.
That's why he had so many on hand. So
just a treasure chest full of them. He's like, well, I should put some of this.
So we're imagining this guy is Aaron Stein. He's outside of Pittsburgh, and he's fucking just got a treasure chest of vibrators.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, he lost the stock market to Vibrators R Us.
Right.
And so he takes this.
I wonder what they sell.
He takes this box and fucking opens it, puts the vibrator in it.
Right. Well, tapes it, right? Covered in black tape.
And that's you, I guess you just set the cell phone to like some sort of timer or big clock.
And
or
it
something.
Turns on the vibrator?
Well, no. Yeah, you just
you
tape
have to
it
dial
like
star
the outside
69.
Oh, yeah. Shit. Yeah. That's rad. Or you have to type boobies backwards.
And then, so I let that, but then he robs the bank by just showing some wires.
And then robots have to touch a robot dick. They're like, so this is what I could be
doing.
Yeah,
Wally had to roll out and yeah. fucking get the thing, or Johnny Five.
Johnny Five, yeah, there you go.
That's what I imagine, a Johnny Five. Like, I think the Nintendo.
Yeah, Wally's cute. You don't want to do that to him.
Nintendo came with like a robot
I was thinking
in 1986.
More like,
oh my God, you're right.
Like, just send
so
a, like,
maybe it was
like
just
a little,
that robot.
Like 8 year old kid robot in, like Daryl.
I thought you meant like Haley Joel Osment in AI.
Or
like, just doesn't blink. Like, I love you, mommy. They're like, grab the dildo bomb.
Just either way, however they could do it. So when if it did explode, it would look really bad. But they'd be like, oh, it's just a robot.
So did you want to talk about the Smash Mouth guy before we get out?
Yeah, I had no idea anything about
you
this.
You don't even know what happened?
No, not at all. I know a lot of people were tweeting him asking him to play his birthday, and he's like, I'm a musician, goddammit. No, I will not play your birthday.
Well, apparently they're on the fair circuit, so they're at least close to the birthday circuit.
That's probably
remember
why
that
were
time.
Him.
Remember that time we played a show, it was a graduation party, and when we pulled up to the venue, I realized it was two girls and her parents, and I just left.
There was something else there.
I just walked. What?
A male stripper.
There was a male stripper.
And that's when you could see him from the deck, and there was a Confederate flag, and Sean was like, fuck this. And
I
literally
forgot about those two things.
Booked the fuck away. Like, I was like, Sean,
that's true.
Sean, we got
He's
a show
not
to
lying.
Play.
He's not lying. Those I forgot about those two things.
I like how you're like two girls and a mom, and I was like, fuck this. I was like, no, it was the male stripper and the Confederate flag. You just like fucking blacked those out?
Dude, I just remember two girls and a mom.
He was,
I was
so,
like,
he was so upset.
Party.
I remember we got there, and he was like, no.
I was like, really?
No, we were pulling into the driveway. We weren't all the way up it. And he's like, no.
I just got out of the car and walked away.
He's like, wow, Confederate flag. And then he looked up to the porch and saw the mail stripper. And he's like, I'll see you guys.
This must be why when he told me this story the other day. And I was like, well, why didn't you just like go there and just be like, I can't play my voice.
And we were
going to
get paid too, like $200. And the dude walked away. He's like, probably stripper money.
I was in the middle of Sawyerwood or some, it was like deep in the fucking hood.
You were far away.
Springfield Lake Shacks, and yeah.
Solid
just,
like hour and a half walk home. And you were like, nah. I was like, we're getting paid. And you're like, eh.
Cool.
Confederate flag, stripper, I'll see you fucks. I was like, all right.
I forgot about those two parts of the equation. Yeah. But anyway, so Smash Mouth.
Okay, they were there?
Yeah. No.
They took our slot.
But he's on the birthday circuit, apparently.
Fair circuit.
The birthday circuit. You craft in Pennsylvania. She sent me the article. I didn't even hear my phone go off. Where is it? Damn, it looks like New Kensington.
Hell yeah.
TR
tweeted him a lot about playing there, so.
What, in Crafton?
Oh, New Kensington.
Crafton Borough. It's a population of 5,900.
They all went
geography.
To the show. Where Sean asked.
Its total area is 1.1 square miles.
And there's 5,000 people? It's like a tiny New York City.
It's Tree City, USA is Crafton, PA. So,
have you watched the video?
What about Tree City, USA?
No.
Oh, God. This. I hope not. I hope that wasn't the video.
Smash Mouth. Yeah, I heard it. I heard it this morning.
I watched it.
I forgot what it's I was.
I have no. Can you guys give me something that's happening instead of the fucking
check
stats of Tree City?
There's
so people, it's 1.1 square miles.
There are people throwing pieces of bread on stage because some vendor at the thing was giving away free bread.
Okay.
So people were just throwing bread on stage
because they
and
have
the
free bread,
the
making it rain,
it look,
kind of.
I'm not sure, but the way the video makes it look is it's the first song because the crowd's
going
crazy.
Yeah, it's definitely the first song.
And they start playing the All-Star.
Maybe they were going to open with All-Star.
They were definitely going to.
My bad. Paul.
Because the band is just looking. What no one will be able to see is that the band is just looking at the guy while he's going off. Like, we're playing. Like, they're just already playing the riff to All Star. So they're just like, are you going to stop cussing?
Yeah, they're building it up already.
People sound like they're having a good time.
You throw one more piece of shit on fucking stage, I'm gonna come find your ass. Part. I'm gonna beat your ass, whoever the fuck
in
you
video,
are.
Okay? How many pieces of bread do you see? Two, three.
There's walk one right there. And now, like, a couple start flowing at him.
Who's not gonna throw their bread when the singer is Smash
like,
Mouth?
Walk your, we said, walk your fat ass up here. The last time I saw Smash Mouth, he wasn't in the trimmest of shit.
They're like, hold up.
Weird to cast thrones from a glass house is all I'm saying.
They're at a fucking food festival.
Yeah. It's like a hot dog eating contest. Why are all these weenies
showing up? You're Smash Mouth at a food festival. Like, fucking lighten up, brother.
Got mouth in the name.
Where the fuck do you expect you're at?
Got mouth in the name.
That's why they got him for it. Like, it wasn't even because they heard of him. They're like, oh, Smash Mouth. They must like food, too. They probably won't mind when they
listen to him. He's like...
How many times did this happen? The band's like knows
listen
what song
the
they go
band.
Into.
They're
yeah,
just,
they're like
playing All-Star.
They're like, oh, here it goes again.
I know, dude, it's so hilarious.
They're
they
playing
don't stop. They're looking at him dun, like, what's going on?
Dun, dun.
Oh, so this looks like the first time he's like fucking lost his shit.
Yeah, it's like maybe they're like optimistic.
Oh, wouldn't be awesome? He's like, no, I rewrote the song.
Listen to what he just said. He was like, you are ruining the show for thousands of people right now because I'm going to walk off stage and beat your ass. Like, this guy's provoking him
right.
so much by the bread hitting
he
the
is
stage
the cause for this. He's like, he's like, I have to do this.
Are tons
instead
of people
just
Dave Grohl just broke his leg on stage and then kept playing the set. He was like, someone bring a microphone to me. I broke my leg really bad. And then came back out on stage like two songs after that. After they rapped, it was like, and this dude can't handle some bread.
There's more than one piece of bread. Dude, go to a punk
I mean,
show,
it's like
get
raining
hit in the
bread.
Face with a fucking
raining
bottle
bread.
And spit and fucking probably get AIDS from some bleeding on you.
Is he and like off the stage right now?
He's bitching about blood.
Does the band have to play the song? Or they're like, well, we're contractual obligated to, so we'll just go with it? I don't understand.
We don't have to do a whole set, but we have to do All
Star
like, and Walking
well,
on the Sun. So
They're sitting there going, here's our fucking singer, drunk as fuck, yelling at people.
So they just go into the song? It's like, well, this is all we know, guys. They're like the fucking violinist from Titanic.
What else are you going to do?
We go down with the ship, fellas. Play him another tune.
You always learn to just keep playing. Like, you jumped off stage and broke your back and smacked yourself in the eye with a guitar one time and just kept playing a riff.
Definitely all that happened.
So, what are you going to do? You just soldier.
But that guy should have taken that approach and just soldiered through the bread.
I remember always watching footage on VH1.
Bread hurts
of,
when you get hit in it, with it.
They soaked it like little bread balls.
They soaked it in liquid cement.
I was always watching these. I was watching these VH1 specials where like the chick from Jefferson Airplane would just start being like, "Hitler should have won the war" or some shit like on
the
stage.
Did she mean it?
And, like
she holding like Mein Kampf?
She's like drunk, yelling and stuff.
Wow,
and,
that's a weird hill to die on when you're
band,
on stage in front of people.
The band, I can't remember what she said. I should look it up.
Remember
just,
when that guy did a horrible thing to a bunch of people? Well, he should have won.
I mean, she.
Anyways, like, here's White Rabbit.
That's kind of what happened. Like, I think that's what song it was in.
Yeah, that song's dedicated to Hitler in the fucking footnotes. Nobody caught it. It said the Führer.
Hitler.
Yeah. It's in a German accent. To Hitler, oh, the Führer.
I don't know if I can find it on stage, but she's like just in Germany yelling about it, I think.
Yeah.
I think it was in Germany. Might have been Jefferson Starship. And she just starts yelling at people. What's her name? Grace Slick?
I have no clue.
You don't know this?
Not at
information?
All. It's weird that I knew White Rabbit, honestly. Pretty sure it's because of The Matrix.
Grace Slick, junk on stage in Germany.
Oh, I know Jefferson Airplane because of Cable Guy.
Oh, nice. Oh, right on. Yeah, good call.
Because
maybe that's where I know it from. I don't know. Definitely wasn't in The Matrix, but they had a White Rabbit in it. I think that was more so.
I think
to do
she's
with
like,
Alice in Wonderland.
I think she's like ripped off her, ripped all the footage of this stuff off the internet. Man,
yeah, but
all right,
at least she wasn't afraid to let the show go on.
Yeah, did she play the song afterward? After she's like, Hitler should have won. All right, here's. Well, we're still going to play the hits, but I mean, I just want you to know my standpoint.
I think everybody started.
So, I'm an artist, goddamn.
Are you
going to
watch it? Are we over the special? Do you want to know how it ends?
Yeah. Oh, wait, do they fight? On stage? Mortal Kombat style?
He was in the crowd.
You're at the point where the security is talking to him, right? Like, security's holding him back.
Somebody threw something at me.
Like, he's like, if this security guard wasn't holding me back, I'd come out there in the crowd.
Yeah, I think there's a security guard standing in front of him, but it's like a guy in a polo shirt.
Yeah, he's holding him back.
But
a bat?
He's
holding him back.
He's not touching him.
I was like,
yet.
Wow, that's a badass security
at least
guard.
They're standing like me to you in front of him. But they keep. There he goes. Now he's touching
him. Wait, Bob,
him.
Start singing the
now
song.
Now he's holding him. Now he's got his hand on his chest. And they're like walking around with them like, you're not, they're like, get back up there. They're like, you're not going to beat up somebody.
He's probably telling them right now, if you don't go up there and sing that song, you're not getting paid.
There is so many little kids right here in the peripheral of where the camera's filming too.
A lot of people are walking away.
It's him, man.
Yeah.
Oh, is he in the crowd?
Anymore. Not anymore.
Nah, he's back on stage.
He's done. He doesn't sing anymore.
Now everybody's singing.
Well,
it's just the crowd.
Yeah, he ain't singing it. No, there's like a backing track or something going or something.
Now all I would want to do is watch Shrek.
There, he's singing there.
Do you think he dies a little bit inside every time he sings this song?
No.
I don't know, the way that he acts, I feel like he does.
Yeah, maybe, because that's why they play it first. Goddamn,
get it out of the way.
Of the
he's
way.
Already blacked out drunk. Probably going to try to fight someone.
Smash Mouth was a good band, man, until that.
I'll still listen to that song.
I just lost my credibility. What, All-Star?
Hell yeah.
Who will listen to All-Star?
I just said it.
But I'll listen to Walking on the Sun any fucking day.
Walking on the Sun's fantastic.
Oh yeah, I forgot that's not put
it's
in.
So long.
I'm like turning it up, thinking it's sweet. All right, we should get the hell out of here.
Especially on this note, this is a great song.
This one.
Yeah, this one.
Ain't no doubt.
wait, go out. You karaoke the whole thing.
Wild singing, perfect harmony. We got the stoners in the '80s smoking weed and blah blah blah. This is a love attack.
I wish I had the words.
In fashion,
the little ball of them.
In the rhythm, if you got the goods, come on in by it. Stay in the
clink. I throw bread at you. Give me bread, Bob. Give me some bread. I can deter this. He'll stop singing.
It's a very good song about just smoking weed, man. You might as well
be walking on the sun. Wait, that's what it means?
I don't know. But listen to the next verse, man.
What the fuck? You're like,
listen,
Hitler should have won.
Listen.
I'm like, really? You're like, I don't know.
Hold on. But you gotta listen to this verse. You have to listen to this verse. And
where he drops
and
the weed
dissect,
in.
Dissect the Smash Mouth lyrics.
All right, if it's burning, I'm gonna hate you.
Listen. You gotta listen. Alright, 25 years ago. 25 years ago, they spoke out and they broke out of recession and oppression. And together they toked and they poked out with guitars around a bonfire, just singing and clapping. Man, what the hell happened? So,
okay, yeah, no, he said they toked.
Yes, yeah.
All right, on.
He says 25 years ago.
It's
about like how the hippies.
Well,
had
he said it. Recession and regression, and I was
because
like, I lost it.
The hippies came out of the.
yeah, where he hit
so
that, I was like, I'm
out. Is this a song about Jefferson Airplane?
Oh my god. And then at the end, he's like, Hitler won the war. You didn't say Hitler won the war?
But so 25 years ago. Like, because this song came out like, what, 99? So, anyways, talking about, the hippies, man, and they smoke weed and.
And then now, I think, and then the last verse is about people in the 90s smoking weed or something. It's just about like,
well,
hey,
supplies are running out. I'm guessing he's meaning dispensaries.
The song the song was about how
dry.
Yeah, and when that happens,
you might as well be walking on the sun because you want to die without marijuana.
I've always understood that this song was about how weed makes people come together. That's what I've always felt like it was about. And all I think, right, he talks about different eras the whole time. Like, here's the next last verse. When our mama's handkerchief is soaked with the tears because the baby's life has been revoked. The bond is broke. A baby's life's been revoked?
What does that mean? No, don't start jamming. Listen to the lyrics. I'll talk over them all.
Okay.
The crack. He's talking about babies not making it, and he's like, put away the crack. This took a weird
turn. This last verse is about the hood, man, and burying your 10-year-old baby on the crack.
Maybe this is like a PSA for fucking drugs, like marijuana leading to crack.
I took it as weed brings people together and crack.
And then leads to crack and then breaks up families.
No, crack makes your children die. Please don't be that when your baby's old enough to relax.
Well, he's still saying, don't delay, act now. Crack is running out. Well, yeah, I know crack wasn't the line.
Alright, I've had enough. Let's have a good day. You might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun.